There's only one place to begin this week, Colin. A lifeline for News Hub, upwards articulation, upwards intonation there. Within a week of the confirmation that News Hub will close in July, Stuff will be taking over the 6pm news bulletin. And this was kept really quiet, really quiet.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, there was reports and rumours that Stuff was the one in the frame to do it. No one had quite seemed to expect it to be that quick. But I rang around people when we heard that there was a possibility of meetings at News Hub or announcement at News Hub on the Tuesday. Rang around people at Stuff and they didn't know anything about it. Some staff say, look, that's possibly not a surprise. There's a bit of a division between their digital managers these days and the rest of the business, so maybe. But last weekend on Media Watch, spoke to News Hub's boss, Richard Sutherland. He was kind of appointed to run it on an interim basis, former news chief here too at RNZ. He said he didn't know anything about the plan or what the bosses, his bosses at News Hub were negotiating. So extraordinary that they kept it quite so quiet. And when you step back a bit, you think, only 4 years ago, Sinead Boucher acquired that company, yeah. Stuff, most of the country's papers, for $1. Yeah. And now they're going to be making 6pm news, you know, for one of the big commercial TV broadcasters. It's quite a story.
It's quite a story, all right. Mm. So look, take us through, yeah, there's been so much reporting on this and speculation in the media sphere. It's probably worthwhile laying out what we actually know about what is going to replace News Hub at 6.
Yeah, what we know, I mean, I suppose people who have followed this will know the basics, but really briefly, it's going to be an hourly, weekly bulletin on weeknights, much as it is now, half an hour in the weekends, and they will pick it up from July the 6th, which is the day after News Hub ceases and Warner Brothers Discovery cease, you know, employing News Hub to make it. Stuff will hire some of the News Hub staff to make that bulletin, and initially they'll do it from TV3's Auckland studio that's in Eden Terrace in Auckland. And the deal is Three and Warner Brothers will get the ad revenue that they sell in the breaks from this bulletin, and they'll be paying Stuff annually for the service. So it's kind of outsourcing, basically. And Stuff say they will have full editorial control. So that's the guts of it.
Okay, so that's what we know. What are the unanswered questions at this point?
Quite a few. We don't know what it's going to be called, for one thing. And they say they've yet to work out the style and presentation, and they'll do that collaboratively between the two companies. But crucially, look, we just have no idea what this deal is worth. And there are suggestions that it wasn't enough, you know, because obviously Warners want to carve this cost off their bottom line, and that's the reason they're doing this in the first place. So whatever they're spending would be a fraction of the tens of millions that they were spending on News Hub so far. If it's not a huge margin, you wonder, because there are suggestions. In fact, we know that NZME, the owner of half the country's radio stations and The Herald and other papers, was interested, along with other media companies, in this opportunity. But two former Herald editors in the last couple of days, Tim Murphy and Shane Curry, who still works within NZME, calls himself the media insider now as a columnist and editor at large. They both used the term that possibly NZME dodged a bullet, as in hinting that maybe there wasn't quite enough in this to make it worth their while. But we don't know. So whatever that margin is, Stuff clearly think it's enough to go for. But is it enough to allow them to cover the cost of making this, you know, good enough to attract a TV audience, which is used to, you know, a kind of full-service News Hub bulletin over all those years? So that is what we don't know. Also, we don't know quite how it's going to shake down, because Stuff has made great play of having journalists in, Sinead Boucher says, 19 locations, and they'll be able to leverage that. They, of course, also have their day jobs to do, serving the Stuff website and their regional papers. And quite how they deploy the technology for this, Sinead Boucher has said this will not be on the cheap with iPhones. Stuff, of course, has video journalists, and they've done some sophisticated video productions before. If you think of the election debate, the one they did in the last campaign, quite sophisticated,
really
outside
good, yeah.
broadcast. Yeah, so that, there's a lot, but do expect that they will make the most of their kind of TV-ready people, such as Tover O'Brien, Andrea Vance has been a TV reporter before, people like that,
yeah.
I guess will be a big part of it. Hamish McNeely, the Stuff journalist in Dunedin, incidentally, he was having a joke on social media saying, I'm back online, what did I miss? You know, when it was all announced, one of his colleagues said, oh, we're doing the 6pm news, you're the weatherman.
I go, yeah. Oh.
He replied with the internet acronym FFS.
I mean, just to linger briefly on a point that you brought up before, were you surprised that Stuff took this rather than NZME? Given I see Duncan Grieve has on the spin-off written a piece about, you know, some of the stuff that we know and don't know about this, and makes the observation that, you know, NZME has way more broadcast experience. It has loads of in-house broadcast talent, including who fronted, you know, big news TV shows in the past, Mike Hosking, Heather Dupacy Allen, and so on and so forth. Did that take you by surprise?
A little bit, but maybe that's down to what's on offer, what the margin is here. Maybe just the pitch that they made wasn't right. Just impossible to know. It also depends, like, do they want to do something quite different?
Yeah.
Is that what Warner's wants? Probably not. So, I don't know. So the question for me is whether this is kind of a transitional thing, whether Warner's really want something to tide them over, something to pull in a bit more revenue, keep the audience, because, you know, a channel without any kind of news at all has a bit of a dead feel. You know, it really helps to have warm bodies on in the morning, the evening, and late at night to be able, you know, because people will go there when things happen. And they won't have that. They will still have this evening bulletin, but do they just want to do this so they can transition to an online-only future? It's possible. I mean, just yesterday, TVNZ put out a statement to its clients, its advertisers, saying we are planning for a future beyond broadcast television. They've engaged Accenture New Zealand to work with them to a multi-year program of work to transform from a broadcast-focused entity to one with digital at its core. This will modernise our business dramatically. So they're all doing it. If it's part of that transition, then it makes sense. But I mean, just the thing that gets me, though, about when you say surprise, is July the 6th is not long to get up a full hour-long bulletin and start a few things from scratch.
And especially when that, you know, the direct point of comparison is the TVNZ at 6, which is such a polished product that's been operating for so long, you know. It's you're jumping in the deep end there, aren't you?
Sure are. And that's what makes me wonder whether they're going to do things a little differently. Maybe have longer segments, more international stuff, if they've still got Warner's, you know, rights to that. Maybe they'll have chats, you know, maybe they won't bother with the weather, maybe they'll do more entertainment, you know, who knows, the mix. It'll be fascinating to see what they put up. And I mean, and also good to have an alternative.
Right, let's pivot now to TVNZ, and there is no reprieve for news and current affairs there.
No. I did talk to Michael Wood, former Labour Cabinet Minister, now negotiation specialist for the Etu Union, which represents journalists. They've said they're challenging TVNZ's moves at the Employment Relations Authority. I asked him, would this actually reverse any of the cuts? You know, he said, well, that remains to be seen, but it seems more likely that if TVNZ hasn't lived up to its obligations, there'd be a bit of punishment there. I can't really see how it would turn things around. But, you know, the absence of news and current affairs will change TVNZ1 as well, particularly that channel, and also what it's able to offer online, because, you know, like we were saying before, having those shows, it helps shape the schedule. It does pull people in, albeit that the audiences aren't what they were for evening news. But I was trying to illustrate this actually on Media Watch, playing a bit of the Sunday program, the current affairs show that will go in mid-May as things stand, and playing a bit from the weekend before, really great report on the death of rugby player Billy Guyton, who's suffering CTE from head injuries picked up playing rugby. And I said it was great work by reporter John Hudson, but unfortunately it wasn't.
Yeah, I was wondering if we were going to talk about that this week. You got a wee bit of a mea culpa here, Colin. A
little bit, yeah. So it was actually by Mark Kreisel, his Sunday colleague, not John Hudson. So yeah, apologies to the both of them, and I did sort that out and change that in the program. But remarkably, it was here on Midweek Media Watch back in 2019, talking to Karen Hay. I was talking about another Sunday report, which was about the stress on firefighters. And this had aired, spookily, just the weekend before, you know, that horrible Sky City Convention Centre fire, which put firefighters, you know, front of mind right there in the CBD in Auckland. Here's what I said about it to Karen back in 2019.
But it was kind of weird that there was a documentary on well, it was part of the Sunday show, wasn't there, on firefighters?
Yeah, this was just on Sunday. It was really, really good. It was John Hudson, who's been around a long time, makes great stuff. And I learned a lot from that I didn't know. So, coincidental that it should screen right then.
It wasn't John Hudson, was it?
It wasn't. It was Mark Kreisel again. So one of the things didn't know and later learned. Yeah, so somehow I think the same thing happened in my brain. Just flipped that. And I'm thinking, if you are, you know, a reporter on a program that has found out the program is being discontinued, you know, your own career is, I guess, up in the air, you possibly don't want to hear your work being described as, you know, very, very good, and yet someone else being credit for it. So, yes.
What have you got against Mark Kreisel?
But this is the thing. I mean, this isn't the first time I've got nothing, absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing at all. But it's you know, even when you're trying to say good things about the media, you can end up causing irritation. But, you know, the irony was, it's almost exactly the same circumstances, right? I picked out a bit of the Sunday program. And back then in 2019, it was a similar context. There was also worry about the future of news and current affairs. And so this is what I said to Karen about that in that same Midweek Media Watch back then. It was beautifully shot too, lovely put together. And this is the sort of thing, a lot of people would have watched that in prime time, the last remaining real old trad, old school current affairs show still on telly, I think. And that's the sort of thing we will miss. And I think people who watched that, and there would have been hundreds of thousands that did, would have had that in the back of their minds like I did when we saw what happened on Tuesday in central Auckland.
Right, 2019. What were the worries about news and current affairs in 2019?
Back then, that week, MediaWorks owned News Hub at that time, and they had announced that week they wanted to get out of television, which they eventually did, selling those channels off to Warner Brothers the following year, eventually. Yeah. So that was what it was all about. And at that time, Winston Peters had stirred things up. He opened their party conference by saying, "I've got a message for my friends in the media. It's all bad. For some of them, good riddance." So almost you're dancing on the possibility of a good raise for those programs. So, and also that same day of that Midweek Media Watch, Paul Henry appeared on RNZ's Checkpoint foretelling the death of linear TV like this.
Television is just an old-fashioned term now. No one talks about television anymore. Things are changing, and television has to change, or it will wither and die. And free-to-air television is withering and dying, so it needs to change.
Hmm. Yes, it was 5 years ago, so it's weird that it's just so similar. And yet, so I think there's that particular set of circumstances somehow triggered my mind, you know, death of current affairs, I'm praising the Sunday show, must be John Hudson. I don't know, something going on. I'm sure there's some psychological thing that lets me off the hook that I'm not really responsible for.
Well, you can always count on the media checking in on Media Watch. The media watching Media Watch. Nobody watches Media Watch harder than the media watch Media Watch.
Yeah, well, that guy you have on every other week, you know, Hamish.
What, the Donnell fella?
He would have picked up on that if he'd been on this week.
Yeah, he would have had a good time with it too.
Yeah.
Look, this. How have other media kind of reacted to this trauma, this current trauma, I suppose you call it, in TV news? Because media can often be accused of being a wee bit navel-gazy when it comes to matters concerning ourselves.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. Some people, like Mike Hosking on ZB, went out and said it pretty bluntly. You know, the media's obsessing, other people are losing their jobs. You know, it's so boring when the media goes on about itself, whether he means it or is just kind of playing to the skepticism in his audience, who knows. But the press in the weekend, its editorial in the weekend edition, had some similar sentiments. It said the media risks looking self-aggrandizing and defensive when it writes about itself, for all the understandable angst about News Hub and TVNZ shows. It's about 350 jobs in total. Compare that with 1,500 jobs going from the public service, much less mourned. It says, we don't want to diminish the job cuts, the press said, devastating for all involved. But he says, while interviewers virtually demand underperforming Broadcasting Minister Melissa Lee display some empathy, we saw little political sympathy for those who will tidy their desks at the Ministry for Primary Industries or Ministry for Pacific Peoples. And of course, there'd be more public service job cuts since then. But I think that's harsh because, like, both Michael Wood and Richard Sutherland, of course, both, you know, on the media side of things, both made the point that, look, when I raised this with them, you know, what about this? This feeling that the press was actually talking about there, that the media are too much special pleading. They were saying, look at the output, and you'll see they're reporting their own crisis alongside all the other public service things going on, whilst themselves are at threat of losing their jobs. And I think that's absolutely right. I think they've done a good job of both things.
Let's talk about New Zealand Post, which has dealt another blow to the media.
Yeah, they're all piling in, aren't they? This one, I think, didn't make much headlines. So they are stopping newspaper and parcel deliveries to rural addresses on Saturdays from the end of June. Their statement said, "We need to make some hard decisions about our future as we evolve to meet the needs of New Zealanders." So the Newspaper Publishers, or sorry, News Publishers Association, as it is now, because of their multimedia, say this will severely affect them because regional paid newspapers rely heavily on NZ Post and the Saturday papers, traditionally the biggest and most important for advertisers. So, yeah, that's a worry if people who live outside main centres or in the RDs can't get their Saturday paper delivered to their box.
Do we know what the impact of this might actually be on publishers?
Well, we can only go on the NPA, which I guess are talking up the impact, but they are saying up to 25% of what they call the six-day subscribers in these markets get their paper via the rural delivery from NZ Post.
Wow. So really? That sounds really high.
Yeah. So that means if they get delays, and they will still get that weekend paper, they won't get it till later. Yeah. So they're saying, you know, we think this will basically threaten their willingness to subscribe in print. So they could be offered the digital subscriptions, but they're probably the least likely to want that. They probably really do value having the paper, if you can put it like that. Yeah. And of course, for media, value of digital ads is a lot less than in print. They still do depend on to a lesser degree, but still to an important degree, on old-fashioned display advertising. So they think the NPA has actually said this will probably result in a number of the smaller regional papers ceasing their print production altogether in the nearer future.
So. Yeah, I mean, I'll be interested, I might throw this out to the listeners actually, you know, if you live rurally you found out that your Saturday paper wouldn't be delivered till Sunday or indeed Monday, would you rethink your subscription to the paper? Text in 2101. And all of this kind of went under the radar because of TVNZ and News Hub, right? Like, this did not come out of the blue. It's been signposted for a while.
Well, yeah, it has. So I think that's right. And the first I heard about it was actually about a month ago. It was actually the day that TVNZ first announced that they were doing those big cuts. It was back on March the 7th. I happened to be listening to ZB, and they had former Business NZ chief Phil O'Reilly on as a kind of panel guest, and they started talking about TV, and he was saying, oh, there's more to this than just TV. He wasn't actually talking about the Saturday delivery thing. That hadn't been announced, but just the fact of price rises for delivery. And I didn't even know this because I just don't send anything by post anymore. But here's what he told ZB at the time.
New Zealand Post has informed its customers it's going to put its prices up by another 30% for bulk mail. That's more than 100% of a price increase over the last 4 years, which will lead to the death of magazines. Are we having an existential debate about the dreadful role that New Zealand Post plays in this? No. We seem to be having a debate about TV news. So I think if we are going to have this debate, then we need to say, well, who are we trying to save?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the either-or that he suggests is there. But, yeah, still, it well and truly went under the radar, yeah.
Another thing that went under the radar with the News Hub and TVNZ News, forecasts from the Herald's owner, NZME.
Yeah, they had a shareholder briefing, which they do from time to time, and put out a little slideshow that you can look at online. And they told their briefing that NZME now has 93,000 print subscribers for its papers, and that includes the Herald and all those ones they publish in the North Island, like the Whanganui Chronicle, Northern Advocate, Bay of Plenty Times, Rotorua Daily Post. So all of those together, 93,000. And when you think, it wasn't that long ago, the Herald sold well over 100,000 a day. And you remember they were looking at that every time they looked at the audited figures, it would be, oh, is this the quarter that they'll go below 100,000? And there are people working at the paper that of just watching some of the comment about this online today, saying they can recall worries about 200,000 being the cutoff point. But Jeremy Rees of RNZ actually pointed that I missed it all together in all the flurry about the TV news cuts and all the associated drama with that. But he says NZME in this document says they aim to have 65,000 sales in print by 2026. So that's a decline of about 30% in just a couple of years in print subscriptions. That's what they're planning, or at least telling their shareholders.
Precipitous, isn't it? Mm. Although I do see that Jeremy also tweeted on April the 11th that NZME told its shareholders its digital publishing revenue can now support its entire newsroom and journalism. Obviously, you know, that's a sentence. There aren't sort of numbers attached to it, and I suppose that could mean multiple different things. But that is a pretty astonishing achievement with regard to Herald Premium, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. And there is a pie chart in the slideshow for that shareholder briefing, which shows that if you go back 5 years ago, the digital revenue they were getting was 13%. So the rest of it would have been print ads and other stuff they do, outdoor advertising and so on. So 13% 5 years ago, that's now 29% just five years later. I mean, the revenue might be a little less today than then. I'm not actually sure how that would balance out over the 5 years. But that is, more than a doubling in the digital revenue. But of course, for digital revenue, as we've heard so much from the TV folks over the last few days, you know, they are all local media fighting in the digital realm for against the big tech titans who are so good at attracting that digital revenue and clipping the ticket on online search and social.
Indeed. And speaking of digital revenue and sort of online media, there has, amid all of this doom and gloom, been a really great bit of news for a local journalist down in Southland.
Yeah, this is Logan Savory. So he's an ex-journalist from the Southland Times. Long history. He's also worked for Allied Press out of Invercargill, the ODT's publisher. Worked for Fairfax as well before it was called Stuff. Mm-hmm. So, long career working in journalism in the South. And he's up for a Voyager Award for Local Journalist of the Year. But back in January of 2023, he set up his own online publication called the Southland Tribune, and he set it up via Substack. So it's basically a newsletter that people can subscribe to and contribute to if they want. Yeah. And he's making a real go of it, a daily bulletin. He's kept it up for, more than a year and a half now, or around about. And he's doing a special weekend edition, a special sports edition. He's expanded it. It's extraordinary stuff. He even does an Invercargill specific quiz.
I love that. Really?
In fact, I've got one here.
Do you? No. Let's. Don't.
You don't have the expertise. You like asking the questions.
Exactly. That's right.
Enough.
Exactly.
But just this week, I think he was the first with the news. I stand to be corrected on this, but with the news that a couple of councillors in Invercargill have lodged a code of conduct complaint against the mayor, Nobby Clark. That's in relation to the fallout from that TV interview he did with Guy Williams on 3 for New Zealand Today. And he even, a month ago, reported, Logan, that Clark believed he would be stitched up and trashed when that aired, just before it went to air. He put out a story on that and turned out to be right. But yeah, great work, and I wonder if he'll get that Voyager Award for local journalist.
That would be great. I remember a couple of years, maybe it was last year, Dylan Cleaver won Best Sport. I can't remember the exact award, but he also runs a Substack called The Bounce, which is just absolutely terrific sports journalism. It's really cool to see.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. Great stuff. Colin Peacock, thanks very much for coming on. Really nice chatting to you, as always.
No worries, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Indeed. That's Colin Peacock with Midweek Media Watch, and of course, Media Watch will be back on Sunday morning, this coming Sunday, with more news from the world of the media.